Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Isn't that just wonderful? The sound of early morning birdsong, the dawn chorus. Let me take you back to Sunday, the 1st of May, 2022. International Dawn Chorus Day. The day in which millions of people around the globe celebrate the unique sound of nature's symphony. As we have been doing here on Mooney Goes Wild for the past 2.5 decades, the entire team were on standby at various locations throughout the country to broadcast this wonderful chorus across the airwaves. 7 hours of uninterrupted nature brought to you by RTE Radio 1. And we weren't alone. We were joined this year by our sister station, RTE Lyric FM, along with BBC Radio Foyle, BBC Radio Ulster, BBC Radio Scotland, BBC Radio Wales, and BBC Radio Cornwall. Not forgetting our friends on the Isle of Man. All joining forces to share the wonder of the Celtic Dawn Chorus. The marathon broadcast began at 3 minutes past midnight in the early hours of Sunday morning. Hello and welcome to our annual coverage of the Dawn Chorus here on RTE Radio 1. We are indeed delighted to have you with us this morning. And at this point, I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to RTE Lyric FM listeners who are joining us on this journey for the first time. Our main hub, as always, will be Cuskenny Marsh Nature Reserve and Cove on the Great Island and Cork Harbour. On the presentation team with me again this year, Jim Wilson and Niall Hatch. Niall is with me in studio now. Niall, how are you? Looking forward to the big night ahead?
I'm very good, Derek. Raring to go. I love the Dawn Chorus, as you know, as you do yourself. And there's just something so energising about it. So I think we're probably going on adrenaline now at the moment. I'll be relieved when those birds finally do start to sing. But until then, we've certainly got lots of treats in store for the listeners.
Something for everybody, as they say. Let's say hello now also to Dr. Richard Collins, who's at his home in Malahide in North County Dublin. How are you, Rich?
Hello, Derek. I'm very well indeed. It's going to be a great night, I think.
Richard, our ident for this year's broadcast we share with Lyric FM. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Let me play it again because I have a question for you. Can you name the composer, Dr. Richard Collins? I know you have an interest in classical music.
Yes, I think I can hazard a guess, although it's not the most popular part of the piece. It's Respighi's, the birds. Respighi was, well, he loved to paint pictures in music, as Saint-Saëns did in France, and he paints pictures of 4 birds, I think it is. It consists of an introduction, and then pictorials in sound of the dove, the hen, the cuckoo, and I think the nightingale. There's always a cuckoo in these things, and always a nightingale as well. The hen is a bit unusual for these kind of depictions. And the dove, his dove piece seems to me a bit sedate for a dove. You know, doves are more active and vigorous than it sounds, but it's a lovely piece in its own right.
And very appropriate for this morning.
Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Just hearing that there, it does conjure up images of birds in my mind. You can hear them, I can at least, fluttering around the place. You can hear the twittering going on there. It kind of has a little cartoon or an animation playing in my mind when I hear it.
Yes.
Another thing, Derek, is that it seems to me very appropriate that you should play some orchestral music, because the first flute-like instruments, recorders, were made from bird bones, if you please. The mute swans, for instance, a pair of mute swan flutes were found around 38,000 years ago. They flourished. So there is a connection in orchestral music level between animals and birds, indeed, and music.
That's right, Richard. In fact, we've often spoken on the Dawn Course programme before about how the Dawn Course itself can be thought of as an orchestral performance, mm-hmm. because the different birds take the roles of different instruments. You have lower pitched ones, you have ones in higher registers, you have ones that are more rhythmic that take the percussion kind of role. So it's a great way to think about it. The blackbird for me always sounds like flutes. There's something very fluty and mellow about them. Then you get to the robin, it's more like a piccolo. It's sort of jauntier and higher pitched, and then you have the sort of resonant drumming sound maybe that's brought around out by the wood pigeon, that rhythmic cooing that it does. But of course, this year, who knows, we may be lucky to have the new percussion star here in Ireland, the great spotted woodpecker.
Oh, yes.
Genuinely drums. I know we're going to be hearing later about that, all thanks to Terry Flanagan and his programme.
Terry's made a wonderful documentary, which you can hear now from 3 a.m. to 3:45.
I'm really looking forward to that, because that's a magnificent bird. To think that is now part of our Irish Dawn Chorus with the drumming noise it makes on a tree. It is great. And in the same way, though, that you can identify different tunes and motifs within a piece of classical music, and you can also identify the different instruments that are playing, birdsong is very like that. There are some birds where you can identify the tune. A good example would be the chiff-chaff. If we hear that, it's the bird that says its voice. It goes chiff-chaff,
chiff-chaff, chiff-chaff.
Over and over like that. Whereas I think of the blackbird again as more of like a jazz improviser. They don't always sing the same tune. They sort of, they improvise around a melody. They bring in new notes, but you can always tell what instrument is playing it. In the same way you could tell if a piece of jazz, even if it's the same tune, is played on a piano or on a violin or a saxophone or whatever it may be. So I think that's one thing people can do during the Dawn Chorus. Just let the sound wash over you. Just immerse yourself in that whole piece of music. And what happens with the Dawn Chorus too is those birds have evolved their own frequency ranges, so they're not competing with each other over the airways. Each has their own frequency band, just like the instruments do in an orchestra. So I think the link with classical music is very apt indeed.
Absolutely. Now, thank you very much indeed. Okay, we speak a lot about birds on Mooney Goes Wild, as you know, and I think it's fair to say that they are one of Ireland's most popular animal groups. We all know what a bird is, right? But do we really? What actually makes a bird a bird? What sets them apart from other members of the animal kingdom? What special adaptations do they have that other animals lack? What is the secret to their success? Oh my goodness, so many questions. For this special edition of Mooney Goes Wild, we thought we might delve a little more deeply into all things avian. Over the course of the next hour or so, our esteemed panellists, Dr. Richard Collins, Aidan Ilana, Terry Flanagan, Eric Dempsey and Niall Hatch here, will shine the spotlight on the defining features of our feathered friends in this special programme we're calling What Makes a Bird? It is now well established that the 10,000 or so different species of bird with which we share our planet today are descended from dinosaurs. In fact, from a biological point of view, they actually are dinosaurs. Not all dinosaurs went extinct. Many of them make their homes in our gardens, parks and woodlands, along our rivers, streams and lake shores, across our bogs, fields and wetlands, mind how you go, and on our beaches, islands and cliff faces. They are present in a wider range of habitats than any other creatures, which illustrates just how successful a group they are. Modern birds share a surprising number of anatomical features with theropod dinosaurs, the evolutionary group that included such famous creatures as Velociraptor, Allosaurus, and the most famous dinosaur of all, Tyrannosaurus rex itself. It also included Archaeopteryx, sometimes billed as the first bird.
Well, the Archaeopteryx was a really revolutionary fossil when it was discovered. It was first found in a quarry in Bavaria in Germany, and it was discovered only 2 years after Charles Darwin had published On the Origin of Species, which put forward the theory of evolution by natural selection. And everyone was looking for the missing link that would connect modern species with long extinct ones. And here they found in this quarry a fossil that looked very much like any other dinosaur, a big bony jaw, a bony tail, as Richard was saying there, long sort of fingers, but coming from those fingers, you could clearly see the impression in the slate there of wing feathers. There were feathers on those wings and also the side of the tail as well. And the feathers were quite well advanced. It looks like Archaeopteryx would have been capable of at least some degree of flight, perhaps some sort of powered gliding, but it still had claws, little hands at the bend of a wing. So you could see this was very much the missing piece of the puzzle between dinosaurs and birds. And so it's often said that Archaeopteryx was the first bird. This was certainly the first fossil of its kind that was found. Of course, something had to come before Archaeopteryx. Archaeopteryx. Mm-hmm. So its ancestor may have been the first bird, or could have come millions of years before that. And we know what happened is the dinosaurs didn't actually go extinct at all. Birds are dinosaurs. So flying around our gardens, coming to our bird tables, nesting on our nest boxes, we have tiny dinosaurs. And I find that really amazing.
Well, there is one anatomical feature that, today at least, is completely unique to birds. And that is feathers. No other living creatures have them. If an animal has feathers, it's a bird. End of story. Right, Niall?
Yeah, we end the programme now, so?
Yeah, well, off we go. But birds were not the first creatures to sport feathers. An increasing amount of fossil evidence has proven that many long extinct dinosaurs had them too. And also that feathers came first and feather-powered flight came much later. But what are feathers anyway? How and why did they evolve? And what are they used for? Who better to tell us than Eric Dempsey, who is so interested in feathers that he even made a special Mooney Goes Wild documentary all about them. Eric.
Well, Derek, what are feathers indeed? It's a great question. Feathers are, to me, what makes a bird a bird. Nothing else. Nothing else in the whole world has feathers. Lots of things lay eggs. Turtles have beaks. Fish have very light skeletons. But only birds have feathers. And feathers are what makes a bird a bird. If you look at dinosaurs, or if you look at reptiles, you look at various things, the scales. And feathers are almost like highly evolved scales. And if you look at some of the earliest dinosaurs that began to grow feathers, things like Archaeopteryx, you can see this link between an extended scale and a feather. And feathers are very interesting. They're made of keratin. So the central shaft is made of the same stuff as your fingernails, and the outer part is made of the same stuff as your hair. Now, you can imagine how lightweight that is. We all have fingernails at the end of our fingers, but we never ever wake up in the morning and go, oh God, our fingernails feel really heavy today. They're lightweight. Our hair, you can have long hair, but you know what? It's still lightweight on your head when you actually had hair. I've less hair now to feel the weight of as I'm getting older. But it is a lightweight substance. And feathers have allowed birds to conquer the world. Without feathers, birds can't fly. We have strong flight feathers. We also have strong tail feathers, the remiges and the retroses. And these are the really strong feathers. These are the ones that allow the birds to travel. We also have contour feathers. These are the ones that cover the important parts of the bird. We have ear coverts, wing coverts, upper tail coverts. And then we have down feathers. Now think about the importance of down feathers. Many birds are born bald. Things like robins and various birds like that. They're bald when they emerge from the egg. First set of feathers they grow, down feathers. Those down feathers will regulate their temperature. It will keep them warm. It is down feathers that allow birds to survive in temperatures as low as minus 25. So your robin, your goldcrest, your wren can survive in really cold conditions. And then bring that to the next level. Penguins in the Antarctic, minus 80. And they're out there with down feathers keeping them warm. If you see a bird, it's all fluffed up when it's cold, but it's sleek down when it is in the summer. They sleek their feathers down, and that is what allows the bird to control its temperature. And then it's the beauty of feathers. Look at a pheasant. Like, you know, we're all used to pheasants, but take a good look at a male pheasant. Take a good look at a blue tit. Take a good look at a goldfinch. They're radiant, these colours. And then, of course, you have feathers that are designed for camouflage. Think of the amazing camouflage of a female pheasant or a woodcock or a snipe. They're able to just sit down and blend into their surroundings.
So, as we've heard, there is a lot more to birds than might first meet the eye. As a group, they possess a unique suite of adaptations and anatomical features that set them apart from other members of the animal kingdom, and which have enabled them to occupy a wider range of habitats than any other group of animals. The dinosaurs are dead. Long live the dinosaurs! Don't forget, you can email mooney@rte.ie and tell us where you are and hopefully what birds you'll be listening to when the Dawn Chorus starts. But before that, we have a special treat for you. Aideen Gormley delves into the RTE Lyric FM music library to reflect on how composers and songwriters through the ages have been inspired by birds and birdsong.
Thanks, Derek. Hello and welcome. Imitating the sounds of nature is a time-honoured practice among classical composers. Composers from the Renaissance to today have really been delighted to hear the many different sounds of chirping and tweeting which they've brought into their compositions, capturing the sweet sounds of many birds. We turn now to two Irish pieces. In a moment, harpist Leisha Kelly will play a traditional piece, Lundhuv, the Irish for blackbird, and Madrin Rua, the fox. And we'll hear some actual blackbird bird song on this really lovely recording. First, though, to the music of Bill Whelan and The Island Turns. This is the second movement from Inishlakken, a concerto for two violins, one in the classical style and one traditional. Inishlakken was named after an island off the Galway coast. And in this second movement, the two soloists become part of the wildlife of Inishlakken. As summer arrives, the island is host to many terns coming back from their winter migration. Both violins mimic the whirling flight of these restless seabirds as they swirl around the island. Zoe Conway fiddle, Helena Wood violin with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by David Brophy. harpist Leisha Kelly there with the sounds of the blackbirds in full song on that traditional piece Lundov, the Irish for blackbird, and Madrin Rua, the fox. Before that, from the pen of Bill Whelan, The Island Turns, the second movement from Inishlakken, Zoe Conway fiddle, Helena Wood violin with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by David Brophy. Well, Shinna Will, Aideen Gormley signing off. It's been such a pleasure delving into the Lyric FM music library to bring you just a taster of how composers have been inspired by birds and bird song. So many more, including The Lark Ascending by Ray Vaughan Williams to The Bluebird by Charles Villiers Stanford. But of course, we'll be hearing from the birds themselves very shortly. For now, it's back to you, Derek.
Thanks very much indeed to Aideen Gormley and our colleagues in RTE Lyric FM for producing that programme for our Dawn Chorus broadcast. Now, let's move on. Paddy Glacken, the T.G. Carr Gradham Kyole Musician of the Year for 2022, and Donal Lunny celebrate the wonders of nature through music and song. And by the way, Paddy, congratulations on receiving that award.
Well, Gura Caidin Ligat, Derek, and it is indeed a great honour to have been chosen for the Gradham Kyole Award this year. And I'm very happy to be here to share some nice tunes with you and your listeners this morning. And it's truly fantastic to be with you again for the Dawn Chorus. It's something I really look forward to every year. And I must say, not just for the singing of the birds, but the crack as well with yourself, Niall, Jim, and the rest of the team as you guide us on this magical journey into the avian world. On sound, we have Pather Kearney. And beside me here is my old friend, Donal Lunny, with some very, very strange bird accompaniment. What's going on, Donal?
It's a recording that I brought back with me from near Barcelona in Spain, where my son Oisín and his partner have moved in the last few years. And what you were hearing was, among other things, a woodpecker. And it was my first encounter with a woodpecker. It just happened to be tapping away in the forest. I recorded it, and I also caught a Catalan chaffinch. Couldn't understand a word he was singing, but there you are.
Fair play. Well, I just thought we might do something a little different this year, Derek, which I think will complement the theme of the Celtic Dawn Chorus very nicely. Over the next 50 minutes or so, we'll celebrate the wonders of nature through music and song with some of the Celtic nation's most notable traditional and folk music performers. So later, we'll be teaming up with our Celtic cousins in Wales and just up the road in the north of Ireland. But to get the session going, Donal and myself have a few really nice tunes chosen for you this evening. So, Donal, what will we kick off with?
Well, it would be appropriate if we started off with The Lark and the Strand.
Let's give it a go. Thank you. Well, Derek, we're coming to the end of our Celtic Fusion tour, but before we go, we have one last tune for our listeners. Our last tune, Donald, what will we play?
We're going to play two tunes with the same name. The first one is a slow air called The Blackbird. Then we're going to play a tune after it with rhythm in it called The Blackbird also.
We sure will. So enjoy the rest of the morning.
Thank you very much indeed to Paddy Glacken and to Donal Lunny. Now, in 45 minutes, Jim Wilson, Niall Hatch and myself will be introducing the live segment of our Dawn Chorus broadcast this morning from Birdwatch Ireland's Kuskinny Marsh Nature Reserve in Cove, County Cork. We'll be joined by our regular Mooney Goes Wild team members who are based at locations throughout the country, and we'll also be hearing birdsong from around the Celtic world, thanks to our colleagues in BBC Northern Ireland, BBC Scotland, BBC Wales and BBC Cornwall, as well as our old friend Tim Earle on the Isle of Man. But before that, Terry Flanagan presents a Mooney Goes Wild special documentary about the great spotted woodpecker,
one of the newest and most interesting additions to our list of Irish breeding birds.
For me, there's nothing that quite compares with the sound of an Irish woodland in late spring. The rich voices of blackbirds, robins, and wood pigeons proclaiming territory and advertising for a mate. These songs have become so familiar to us as we stroll along, dreaming of long summer days ahead. But recently, a new sound has appeared in some of our woodlands. A sound that we here in Ireland have not been used to hearing. A sound that's very different to anything else. A rapid, resonant tapping, almost like a burst of a machine gun fire, coming from high in a tree. There it is. And believe it or not, it's made by a bird. The drumming of the great spotted woodpecker, broadcasting from deep woodland cover.
Yes, hello.
For those of us of a certain age, the mention of woodpeckers meant only one thing. And it certainly wasn't anything to do with being great in size or being covered in spots. It was what Saturday mornings were all about. Settling in on the sofa for the latest exploits of Woody Woodpecker. RTE Guide movie critic Michael Doherty has fond memories.
Well, Terry, I think that's the famous Woody Woodpecker song. And I actually think that if you ask anybody to name a famous woodpecker in the world, people will automatically go Woody Woodpecker. One of the most famous and popular cartoons there has ever been. Actually started in 1940. He was conceived by Walter Lance, who was the ace animator of the day. This is the guy who worked in Warner Studios, and he came up with two of the most iconic cartoon characters of all time, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. He worked on those two. Came up then with, he wanted an alternative character, and it became a woodpecker, which became Woody Woodpecker.
Tell me a little bit about the laugh then, because it's a very distinctive laugh.
It is, and it is distinctive because it is actually Mel Blanc, who is the great voice animated artist, sound artist of the era. He was the guy who came up with the laugh. But that actually became the thing that kids really responded to, because woodpeckers, they were saying, because he's pesky and because he's a bit devious initially, he changed over the years, he became a little bit more friendly. But they wanted to make him more child-friendly, and that's what really stuck. And then kids started going into school imitating the laugh, and then the laugh became part of the theme tune, and it's in the song. And if you say to even people nowadays, Woody Woodpecker, they'll give you an approximation of that laugh, you know, 70, because remember, this started in 1940. So all these years on, people still remember the laugh.
Well, for those who are not familiar with that laugh, let's have a little listen now.
Yep, Terry, that's the sound of my childhood. Every Saturday morning, the Woody Woodpecker show.
But our story is not that of Woody Woodpecker. It's the story of the recent arrival of the great spotted woodpecker to Ireland. Prior to the early 2000s, woodpeckers were exceptionally rare, accidental visitors to Ireland. And there was no evidence to suggest that any of these lost vagrant birds ever remained to breed here. But that was all about to change, as Dick Coombs from Birdwatch Ireland explains.
Well, the first inkling I had that something odd was going on with the woodpeckers in Ireland was 2nd of June 2007. I was having my lunch down near Rathdrum, just at the entrance to a wood there, and to my amazement, I just heard a single call, pick, pick, the high-pitched pick sound that you get from the woodpecker, followed by another and then another, but never saw the bird. I searched and searched and searched. I kind of kept it fairly quiet because it was the first time, to my knowledge, there'd been a woodpecker in June. We were kind of used to getting the odd, maybe every 10 years you'd get an influx from Scandinavia, the eruptions, but they were only winter visitors and there would only be a handful of them in the whole country. And I'd seen one or two of them before, but this was astonishing just to know that there were a bird in Wicklow in June. I said, oi, something on here.
But it gave you hope that they were actually here and they were breeding.
Yeah, yeah. And then it was, to my amazement, the following April, I got word that there was a woodpecker drumming in that same wood about a kilometre from where I'd been sitting having my lunch. And I went to see it. I saw it drumming there. I watched it a few times. And while I was watching it one day, suddenly I heard behind me one calling. So this really, the hair went up in the back of my neck, that suddenly there were two birds, and I saw the two birds chasing through the treetops, had the telescope with me, I latched onto one of them, and sure enough, the second one was a female. And what they were doing, in fact, I didn't know it at the time, but this was courtship. They were chasing each other through the treetops.
So your hopes were now up that these were a pair. Yeah. And that hopefully that they're going to build a nest and have young.
Yeah, so that was in the spring of 2008. And unfortunately, if I knew then what I know now, the old cliche, I could have easily pinned down the nest. But I mean, the trail went kind of cold as we got into May. But what I didn't realise is they can get quite quiet as you come into May, into the breeding season. And the other thing was, at that same time, there were birds being reported drumming in a few locations in Wicklow. So this was really starting to gather momentum. Mm-hmm. There wasn't just one pair or one pair holding territory, but never located a nest. And it was in late July of the same year, so a few months later, I was working in Birdwatch Ireland, and we got a call from a woman up in Britis to say that she had a woodpecker on the feeder, and she said it had a red crown. So this immediately... I couldn't believe that this meant it was a juvenile, because the male has a little red spot on the back of the head, but not on the top of the head, the crown. So this was a juvenile, and myself and another guy, we legged it up to our house, and we that evening, and she kindly gave us tea and scones. The next minute, there comes the woodpecker onto the peanuts.
But where had these birds come from? Could they have flown in from Scandinavia the previous winter? Had they perhaps hopped across the Irish Sea from Britain? Some serious science would need to be employed in order to find out. Ecologist Faith Wilson takes up the story.
So yeah, it's a very unique opportunity when a species arrives to an island. It's not something that happens regularly. And of course the question was, where have these birds come from? And we'd probably all been watching too much CSI Miami and all the rest of it. We had this notion, oh, genetics will tell us where they came from. And I was talking with Dr. Ruth Carden, who'd done a lot of work on the genetics of deer, and asking her about what material would you need to actually get enough DNA to tell us a story of where these birds had come from. And she dug out a paper looking at eider nests, where they had taken the small little feathers, the down from the eider, after they'd left the nest, and they'd managed to extract enough DNA out of those to work with. So I thought, okay, that's a possibility. And we're throwing this idea around, and I was kind of going, okay, well, we need a geneticist. I'm not a geneticist. I was just part of the woodpecker team, bashing around trying to find nests and follow birds and prove breeding and all the rest of it. And found a geneticist, Alan McDevitt, who was working in UCD at the time. So Alan McDevitt did the genetic work in UCD looking at all of this. And what the genetic work has shown us is that the birds that we have in Ireland have most likely come from the UK.
Well, a very good morning to you, live from Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve on the Great Island in Cork Harbour, near Cove. I'm with Niall Hatch, Development Officer of Birdwatch Ireland, and our local man, Jim Wilson. Before we say hello to the two guys, I want to thank everybody so far for their contribution to this morning's programming here on RTE Radio 1 and on RTE Lyric FM. At 4 a.m. we'll go live with the Dawn Chorus right across Europe, but all the action is coming from here this morning from Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve. This is private land. Jim will explain that in a moment, but it's managed by Birdwatch Ireland. It's one of their reserves. And our man, Jim Wilson in Cork, is the guy responsible for us being here in the first place all those years ago. When I said to Jim, where should we do the Dawn Chorus from? He said here. Explain why, Jim.
Right, Derek. It's a long story, but I'll keep it as short as I can. Well, we were looking for somewhere that had to tick a few boxes.
Indeed.
Including getting the outside broadcast unit in and having enough birds for a dawn chorus to be suitable for a national and international broadcast. And to be honest, I tried to be as objective as I can, but being a Cork man, I reckoned maybe Cuscany Marsh might actually do right on my doorstep. And I went out and I took a really objective look around and I said, it's got a beautiful mosaic of habitats. Mm. In fact, I often describe it as just a little piece of everyday Ireland. It could be anywhere in the country. It's not super duper ultra special for any kind of rare or very, very unusual species. We have one or two, but they're mainly very small crustaceans and insects and things like that. But still, I think it was... I thought, like, yeah, we want to be able to broadcast something that anybody can go out and have a good chance of hearing close to where they live anywhere in Ireland.
Because you've got lots of habitats here. So explain the different types of habitats that are all within close proximity of each other and perfect for our microphones.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we go through a number of habitats that are representative, as I say, of most of the common habitats in Ireland. We've got, we believe it or not, we've got seashore in the harbour. Mm-hmm. We've got two of our mics pointing out over a lagoon. It's called a lagoon because it's not freshwater lake, even though locally here in Cove, people often refer to it as the lake. But technically, it's a lagoon because the seawater can come in at high tide. So it's kind of half fresh, half salt. So we
like
have
myself.
That.
certainly at this hour anyway. Go on, yeah.
So we have that. Then we have reed bed. We have, you know, the species that live on the lagoon as well. Then we've got deciduous woodland. We've got coniferous woodland. We've got a wet woodland, and so-called because you need your waders on to go through the woodland there. And you've also got farmland, so right out onto open farmland. So, I mean, those habitats together sort of make up a beautiful mosaic. And as a result of that, we get a lovely broad mix of members of the Dawn Chorus Orchestra,
yeah,
which of course are the birds.
Okay, so there are some 460 plus birds on the Irish list in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
So how many birds have you recorded here in this area?
Well, on the nature reserve itself, we're close to 200 species.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty good, because when you look at the Irish list, that 460, an awful lot of them are very rare. They've only been seen once or twice ever in the whole country, ever since records began. So, like, if you skim out all of those, 200 species for an area that's, you know, it's really, really small. Like, it was way smaller than Phoenix Park or places like that. That's a neat...
Well, it's 12 hectares here, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay, so if you turn up, you get your name on the list?
Yeah, pretty much.
So myself and Niall will be listed 462. So we will try, as the morning progresses, to allow you hear all of these birds singing together in harmony, but we will endeavour to single out some of those singers so you can get your ear tuned in. This is a listening experience. It's not about who's able to name more birds than anybody else. So just bear with us on that and enjoy the morning for what it is. But I just want to remind you that you're listening to the annual broadcast of the Dawn Chorus on RT Radio 1 and on RTE Lyric FM. Shortly, we'll be joined by BBC Radio Scotland, BBC Wales, BBC Radio Ulster, BBC Radio Foyle and our friends on the Isle of Man. So what I'm going to do now is go quiet for a few seconds. You'll hear the ident and then we'll team up with everybody.
And that's exactly what we did. And despite the rain, on Sunday the 1st of May 2022, between 4 and 7 a.m., the birds sang in the Dawn Chorus.
Thank you.
sisters Fionnuala Hunt violin and Una Hunt piano, and the much-loved traditional piece The Lark in the Clear Air.
And Mooney Goes Wild is presented and produced by Derek Mooney.